Impact presents Backstage, Third Day by Larry Nance.
This program contains mature language for mature audiences.
Welcome, everybody, to Backstage with Third Day. Joining me today are our illustrious three-time Emmy award-winning, I'm sure by the time this actually makes it on the service, she'll have six or seven of those damn things, Carla Stillwell. And the equally acclaimed, and I would like to also say incredibly talented, Osiris Capera. We're really gathered here. In full disclosure, we just recorded Third Day by Larry Nance. And just to be fair to the audience about the nature of the room, we are full of the giggles this evening, mostly because we've come together to do this work. It's the only piece we really have written by Larry Nance. And as Carla pointed out when we started, there's more community in the room than anything else. So I just want you to know that if Larry was here, and I'm sure some part of him is, yeah, he'd be rolling with the craziness too. So welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Awesome. So I just wanted to give a little space for the man, and then we can have a little time to talk about the piece itself. So, memories of Larry Nance, impressions. Who was Larry to you? That's probably the best question. Like, who was Larry Nance to you? I'll leave the floor up.
So here's what's funny. So I meet Larry. It was like 1995. We were at Chocolate Chips Theater Company / Muntu Dance Theater's office. And we were both working for both organizations. So we meet and he goes, "Stillwell, Stillwell, that name is familiar and you look familiar." I said, "Really?" He was like, "Do you have a sister?" Long story short, Larry Nance went to college with my sister Angela at Loyola. So he tells me the story the first time we meet. He's like, "I knew your sister. We got incredibly drunk one night in the dorms. She was awesome." So this is how Larry and I met. So my sister's 8 years older than me, and they were the same age. So Larry and I met at these two other organizations. And Larry is part of the reason I'm at Impact.
Right.
Because at the time, you all were having season auditions for Afrosynthesis and whatever else was going on. I don't even know if y'all was picking seasons ahead, but that was the show.
No, that was pretty much one show by the seat of your pants at the time.
And Larry invited me to audition. So that is my beginning relationship with Larry Nance. He already knew my sister, and he was just a joy. Just a joy.
Before we rotate over to Osiris, it's fair for me to just point this out to everybody. So Larry passed in the summer of 2024. We are recording this a few months after the fact. So as we process what's going on, the grief is all pretty fresh for all of us, but it's not possible to talk about his play without talking about him. So I wanted to throw that back over to Osiris. Your memories of Larry, who was he to you? Who is he and what is he to you? To quote the great poet philosopher Bill Withers.
This is an interesting question because I don't know how honest I can be.
It's as honest as you want the whole world to know about. And if you don't want the world to know, don't say it on that mic.
Okay, so I met Larry here in this room.
We're at the Greenhouse Theater Center, what used to be the Victory Gardens Theater.
Yes, and my very first show, professional gig, was a show, a little play that your mama wrote.
Relevant Hearsay.
Relevant Hearsay, yeah. Stories from 57. Alongside many of these other mother suckers in this room tonight.
That would be me.
Yes, indeed.
That's fine.
So yeah, so I met Larry through Impact. And when I first came to the Impact Theater Company, the Ma'at Production Association of African
Why are you channeling ancient Richard Pryor in this mode?
I don't know. No, when I first walked up and through these doors, I was still one of them halfway closeted in between fagots.
Disclaimer for the audience. He can call himself whatever he wishes.
They would like to call themselves whatever they would like to call themselves.
I'm sorry. They can Thank call you. Themselves. I'm sorry. Pronouns you. Notwithstanding.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Now, clearly I'm not there. obviously. And so Larry was one of the first people to honestly hit on me. And I didn't know what to do with it. Because I was like, oh, okay, sure. I don't know what's happening here. That's how I felt. And so my initial...
Do me a favor before you pivot. So was that a safe space, or did that feel like...
Oh, no, it was, I didn't feel, no. No, it was definitely, he approached me without approaching me.
I don't actually know what that means. You can unpack it if you wish.
Okay. I'll put it like this. Back in the day, for those who don't know, because you don't have to be this non-forward now, there used to be a thing as subtle as if you placed your middle of your finger into someone's palm, mm-hmm. that was you saying, I'm queer too, mm-hmm. right? It's like the fact that in the 50s, the United States government was searching for Dorothy in the city of Chicago. They were looking for the Friends of Dorothy, not realizing that it was just Judy Garland. Like, yeah. So those subtle little things. He did things like that. And I was like, oh, those are you? I can't, but I'm not sure. And I didn't feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I was just like, huh. Okay, cool. Yeah. And then from that point forward, our relationship was always like, huh, you're cool. Cool.
Is it inappropriate to tell a little backstory to make Osiris's comment, to give it context?
I don't have any reason to censor about Larry's life. However right. much you and Osiris need to censor about Osiris's life is between the two of you.
No, I will just give context. Yeah. So Larry was queer identified human being. However, Larry, at the time Osiris met Larry, had been married to a heterosexual woman. And they may or may not have had a child at that point.
Not at that point, no.
But he was married. And the confusion for a lot of people was, you're married to this woman and you're in this straight, this heterosexual relationship, but you are very much queer identified in the streets. So right. it was confusing for people. But for those of us that knew Larry, we understood that his Larry. Politics yeah. were different from his love for his wife. He loved his wife and she knew that he was queer identified, and they came to an understanding. And to my knowledge, he never broke the covenant of their marriage. But part of the downfall of their marriage, as I understand it, and this can be edited how it wants to, is that he decided to, when things started to get sticky in the streets, he decided to be political and openly political about his queer identity and fighting for gay marriage and queer rights and things like that. And that wasn't part of the covenant.
I just want to say that I've knew Larry. That's an adjustment right there. Knew Larry for 3 decades or so. And that man's identity, his own comfort with his sexuality, his comfort with really living in two spaces at the same time, kept evolving. And so the context of this piece is really a conversation about Larry essentially having conversations he didn't actually ever have.
Right.
With his parents.
His family did not know about all of that.
But before we pivot to that, Osiris was raising their hand and wanting to jump in.
What I was going to say was actually pivoting back towards the piece as well. And I think that if you look at that politic as a space of challenge, I think that there's something really beautiful about in this piece being set in 1987, and you think about what the world is existing in, especially for queer people in 1987. It is the height of the AIDS epidemic in that moment. How much harder is it to come out as a Black gay man in 1987?
Yeah.
Right? A context that I think now it's even harder to understand fully. I think people still forget that the, if you're Generation Alpha, you don't even know the thing happened. You don't know. You just running around.
It's like reading about the T-Rex. They heard about it.
They heard about it. But the reality of...
They don't know nothing about the house in Virginia, baby.
No. Or the three letters that TLC referred to.
Nah.
Who is TLC? That's not...
First, my apologies to Osiris for fumbling through the pronouns. We will endeavor to be better about that. The question around the play, for me, mirrors my relationship with Larry. I was friends with Larry for at least 10 years, and Carla was like, when you gonna accept that brother is gay? And I was like, what? And she was like, when you gonna accept he's gay? I was like... So here's the thing. I don't accept that anybody's anything until somebody makes a declarative statement to me. So there's nothing for me to accept. I haven't put Larry in any box other than the one he's presented to me, which is, this is my wife, this is my relationship, this is who I am. And she was like, Larry's never going to do the thing that you're asking for. And it's our job as his friends to meet him halfway. And for me, that was a light bulb that went off that was like, okay, let me figure out how to do that, right? And there were other company members that came along in the years that had significant others that were same-sex partners and also couldn't cross the chasm to say, this is the most important person in my life, this is my partner. And I remember sitting in a space where a female member in the company, her partner was challenging us as company members for not recognizing her. And we had to say to her as best we could, I can't jump that chasm if your partner isn't willing to bring me into that space with you. And so in the theater world, we're always trying to figure out how to navigate evolving sense of self, evolving identities, and the fact that all of our communities sort of overlap. And so to bring it back to the play itself, I just find it fascinating that the play is about a conversation that I know Larry could only have on paper. That he was never able to have this conversation with anything other than with his wife, but certainly not with his blood relations, or his son notwithstanding. Anything that you all want to share just about that arc, that process, that sense of community that we as theater people have always had to kind of try to figure out how to navigate?
You know, I spent a lot of time with Larry. We were extremely close, and I'm going to try not to cry. But it was very interesting watching someone navigate the politics of being queer identified, LGBTQ, when all them, the libidinous had not gotten so large at that point. Everybody was not engulfed in the whole, in the acronym at that point. But watching somebody have emotional deep, because he loved his wife.
Yeah.
And he loved his son and he loved his family. But watching somebody navigate that traditional hetero love versus their politics, because again, you know, telling too much business, Larry did not engage in same-sex coitus until he was very grown and very divorced and all the way. So it was really a political and spiritual and emotional journey that he was on with the community while he was still very much in love with his wife and his traditional cis family. And it was torturous. I watched my friend really struggle emotionally trying to balance these two things because our world was not set up at that time for this broad spectrum of realities. Mm. Like, what is it? I can't think of the
blended
word.
Blended family?
Not blended family. When you have multiple identities, like...
That'll work for now.
Yeah.
Multiple identities.
Like, the world was not... There's actually a term I can't think of, but the world wasn't set up for us to be... have these multiple realities and these multiple spaces that we lived in. And he was doing this shit before it had labels, you know? Yeah. Larry's pronouns were they, them before we knew you were supposed to change your pronouns. Like, Larry was never, like, Prince was his favorite artist for a reason. Mm-hmm. Like, Controversy was one of his favorite songs for a reason. Like, Larry just didn't fit into any of those boxes.
You know they did that as a service.
I know they had to.
Yeah, they
had to.
Yeah, yeah.
So I, because I remember when he wrote this piece, when he wrote Third Day, he never wrote it for it to be anything other than
a catharsis,
yeah. a moment for him to just say all the things he never got to say to his dad, and he never say it to his family.
Yeah, it should go with this conversation that. It's not an accident that the father in this is a pastor. I don't know that was Larry's relationship with his father, but I know that Larry was till the day of his passing still deeply engaged in a church. He found a church on the west side in the Austin neighborhood that was queer welcoming, but he was always navigating this space of how his faith and his identity didn't have to be in conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to give you all an opportunity if you had something you wanted to say about the play, its time, or what it means now as sort of an artifact, not just of the man, but of a particular moment in time. Because I imagine that some people that listen to the play will be like, well, that's incredibly dated. And the answer is, of course it is, but it didn't mean that wasn't his life.
But, you know, I argue, is it dated? Is it dated? Like, we are a day outside of what many think is the most consequential election of the history of this nation, where there's half of the country that is still having these very, what we in this room feel like are arcane arguments about people's beliefs and gender identity and all this. And I know for a fact there are still children that are not comfortable telling their family how they're living any parts of their life. We don't even have to get into, you know, I mean, this play and the focuses on that discovery and then exposition of who you are in your sexual identity. But there are many this idea of what it means to be a man or a woman, or like these conversations are as old as time, and there's always going to be some child, some person that can't actually say that and believe that they will be able to move forward with their family.
Mm.
So I don't know if this story is ever going to be dated.
To piggyback off of that, we are less than 24 hours away from possibly living inside The Handmaid's Tale.
So. Come on.
To be fair, by the time you listen to this, that ship will have sailed.
And yeah. I might be in Ghana. Yeah. So my passport is fresh. Okay. I might be in Ghana.
Paraguay is not that far away.
I used to cry for Tracy cause I want to see him again. But sometimes, life ain't always the way.
One of the things we were talking about before we started actually doing this, I did have to have a coming out conversation with a parent. And I had it with my mother. Like, literally, I said, I came out as bisexual at the time, to which she said, I know. And I said, well, how? And she said to me specifically, yesterday at your sister's graduation, you were watching some man's ass harder than I was.
That's so black. That's such a black mama type of thing.
But so, she's keeping it real.
But she's like, you were watching some man's ass harder than I was. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, well, at least we have the same taste. And I said, wow, I don't know if that's a good thing, Mom. But thanks. Cut to that next Christmas, she then kicked my first boyfriend out the house and was not allowing him in to celebrate Christmas dinner. Cut to a decade later, it was the last Christmas I would share with her, and it was just me and her and my then boyfriend. So I know that eventually that conversation does lead to some form of acceptance in your family, if your parent allows it. I unfortunately never did have the opportunity to have that conversation with my dad. He passed away before we could explore that. We didn't have a strong relationship to begin with, and so by the time I figured out I might want to talk to that Negro on a regular basis, he was like, I'm out. And so I didn't know.
Sometimes it snows in April. Sometimes I feel so bad, so bad. Sometimes I wish that life was never ending. And all good things they say never last.
I applaud Larry for exploring this. I think that's what I opened with earlier about this whole beast being in the 80s and how difficult that had to have been. I mean, this is...
It was a 90s era production, just to be fair.
But yeah. But sure. when he says 87, I know for a fact, because him and my sister went to college together, that was their freshman year of college. Yeah. Mm. And so in his mind, like, I just, because I know that piece, I know that when he went back to write about it, that was the time he wanted to have that conversation. Mm. That was the time that was important to him.
No one could cry the way my Tracy cried. Sometimes it snows in April. Sometimes I feel so bad, yeah. Sometimes we wish that life was never ending. But all good things they say never last.
We would love to sit here and talk all day about Larry Nance, but there are time constraints in the studio. Know that our brother is loved, that our life together was rich and powerful, and that we as a company are happy to have an opportunity to celebrate both his life and his work once again. This has been Backstage with Third Day. Thank you for listening. Check us out again next month.
Often I'll be back, y'all.
Heaven, and I know that Tracy's there. I know that he has found another friend. Maybe he's found the answer to all the April snow. Maybe one day
I'll see my Tracy again. Sometimes it snows in April. Sometimes I feel so bad, so bad. Sometimes I wish that life was never ending, but all good things they say never last. But all good things they say never last. And love, if it isn't love, until it's past.